Well, good evening.
Good evening.
Jeffrey, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
You were very missed.
You were all very missed as well.
And I'm sorry I missed your play. I was going this weekend and I was discommoded somewhat.
Well, you know how one is. It's you're supported by the universe in so many ways. So many people attended that I didn't know were going to attend. And,
good.
It's so wonderful to see people after the play and hear their experience. And, you know, I benefited from the fact I was in something that was really powerful, that moved people. And I was just surrounded by all this talent.
Yes. Yes.
So. But
did you have fun?
I had more fun than I could have ever calculated. Mm-hmm. So part of the experience that I had was understanding what I had missed by had I not done it.
Uh-huh.
So you know, had I not done it, I just simply wouldn't have known all that I did and how I grew. It was a real stretch for me. So it's good to be stretched. It had many components like sashin.
Yes, yes. Well, theater is the original religious expression. Some say that that's where religious practice comes from, is theatrical. What we now see is something we do on a stage and it's not the same, but it started out being the same. And it still has elements in it of the same. It's to move people. And so those who are participating are deeply moved if it's possible for that to happen.
Yes.
In wonderful ways. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We're coming to the end of this little book, but not to the end of the Heart Sutra. We'll never get to the end of the Heart Sutra. But we could get to the end of talking about it for a while. And then probably in another 5 years pick it up again. It never gets old, ever. So we've come to part three, which is the Bodhisattva path. And Bodhisattvas are very simple creatures. They just have a couple of intentions. And one is to liberate all beings. And the other one is to attain enlightenment in order to liberate all beings. Now, this is Red Pine's take on this. And this is the way the Heart Sutra is expressing it as without attainment, the Bodhisattva attains Anuttara Samyak Sambodha Bodhi, which means ultimate enlightenment. So this is a puzzle for us to we don't talk about enlightenment so much. But with Bodhisattva practice, the primary practice is to practice the precepts and the paramitas, generosity and wisdom and meditation and kindness to all. It can be boiled down to more, or expanded to less, or expanded to more, but the main thing is to live without hindrance, or what Red Pine calls walls. That these walls that we set up for ourselves in order to protect ourselves from really the humility and the softness of heart that comes with bodhisattva practice. It's what we long for and what we resist very much. And so the Heart Sutra is saying if we practice taking refuge in the three treasures, that's a wonderful practice. Return to Buddha. Return to Dharma. Return to Sangha when we get really mixed up. Come back home. Simple, simple. Anybody can do. Anybody can practice bodhisattva way. It's not fancy. And what it's saying is that without these walls, we have to be without fear. But the fears come from delusions that life is permanent, pleasurable, self-existent, and pure. All the things that we try to believe, they're all beliefs. Things are permanent. Nothing is permanent. Nothing. Things are pleasurable. And what Buddha said is seeing as pleasurable what isn't really pleasurable. Like a lot of things that we do that later we think, why, that wasn't really fun at all. That was just a distraction. And self-existent, that there is this permanent self that continues to be the same no matter what. And pure, how hard we try to be perfect, to purify, when already we're perfect. Just like this. So Red Pine says, or Ching Mai says, the absence of walls explains how the liberation door of emptiness works. This means by understanding that dharmas are empty inside and out, the vision of one's wisdom is not blocked by the nature of existence. When we see how impermanent, how selfless, how difficult life is, our wisdom, our ability to clearly live, isn't blocked. We acknowledge and accept the way things are. Things as it is, as Suzuki Roshi said. We live things as it is. And Red Pine says, our fear begins with our separation from emptiness, and it ends with our reunion. So that's the crucial element of our practice. of sitting. So it gives a list of fears, but I think we could add to those fears. Fear of survival, criticism, death, being reborn in a bad existence, and of speaking before an assembly. That's one of the biggest ones, believe me. But there are lots more, lots and lots more. But there is nothing to grasp in the mind. It's just passing through. And we don't need to grasp. So with no fears, having no walls and no fears, is the liberation door of formlessness. Forms come and go. Come and go. So with nothing to attain, or as Red Pine says, nothing to we call it no hindrance. And he just says to live to see through delusions and finally nirvana. He just says see through. Cobain said to fulfillment with nothing to fulfill. In other words, it's already fulfilled. We don't have to go trying to find more. There's nothing to fear. That we don't drop our delusions so much as see through them or step right past them. We need to see them, and we are reminded continually as we get through our life from day to day, but they no longer need to be walls. They no longer need to hinder us, to block us. We can just go with everything. Know the great mantra of Prajnaparamita is taking refuge in Prajnaparamita, the great womb of the mother, is what Red Pine calls in his sort of feminist take of this whole thing. Avalokiteshvara is showing us the door in. So we take refuge in Prajnaparamita itself. And not attain nirvana. So we've been saying no all the way through the whole sutra. Know this, know that. Know of Buddha's teachings. Of this and that. So, of course, when you get to the very end of it, how could there be enlightenment in terms of emptiness? All things are translucent and transparent and are coming and going. even enlightenment. I brought a couple of things. So we realize Anuttara Samyak Sambo Bodhi, or unsurpassed complete perfect enlightenment, without hindrance. And then we chant the mantra. And Koban had a lot to say about that. He had a lot to say about chanting. And what he said about the gate gate is this. In this word, gate is the Sanskrit root gam. In English, you would say go. It frees things. You might say, let it go, let him go, let me go. This is an expression of no permanence. By increasing your speed, you don't reach permanence, even though we try to reach it. By increasing our speed, and this is our suffering. And by stopping our speed, we cannot reach permanence either. The more you climb, strive, you advance in the opposite direction. The fantastic thing is that in Sanskrit, gone means to come. Go and come are the same thing. So if it speaks of someone else, it's gone. If you speak about yourself, you say, it's gone. But if you see no one else, it's always come. By repeating the mantra a couple of times, from small sounds to large sounds, it's the same as calling from a distance. The whole sutra is actually one mantra, zoomed in. The gate was zoomed in and the sutra appeared. You can erase the rest and just recite the mantra. And then he gave a little riff on chanting, which is what I've handed out. And bottom line, he says, when people are very joyful, joy has a sound. And this is a sutra of joy. We often chant it in a very serious way. Koban says, even in a funeral, it's a joyful thing. It's saying all the blockages that keep us from a peaceful heart and mind are not. And we can go and we can come within our own wisdom, our own compassion, our own love, coming and going, coming and going. Sometimes I used to say, gate, gate means keep on trucking. You know, just keep on whatever. Sometimes we have to. But the basis of it is this expression boiled down to just this all things are coming and going just as they are, and it's okay. So that was quick, I know, and you may want to add a lot more to it than I've said. Red Pine says a whole lot more, and the people that he quotes. But I think the essence of it is just this quiet tying up the end by, you could say, the crossing over and the crossing back. The nirvana and samsara as the same place in the same time, no matter what. That's really what it's saying. This is it. Questions?
Not so much a question as a comment about Red Pine's translation as use of the word law, which I find so evocative. If you run into walls in your life, and the way he's talking about walls of our mind fascinated me, and it just resonated deeply. And I had while I was gone, almost transformer had passed, and I had been reading a lot of his poetry this past year. So many of his pieces kind of moved in this direction, and a haiku that I want to share with you. Presence of God in the tongue of bird song, a closed door opens. Transformer used walls quite a bit, too, in his poetry and in his imagery. The wall that you can't see through a wall, but if it's built like some of the walls I know, you can hear through them. And so sometimes you can hear stuff on the other side, and that might be really, really important, you know. Press your ear close to it and see what you can hear. You know, sometimes I'll share with you, when I went on stage, the only thing I have of my grandfather is his little pinky ring that he wore, and my father, this wristwatch which I always wear. I had my ancestors with me on stage. This is something I listen to and hear their words all the time. I don't have to do anything. They're just always there. And that's that thing of the wall, the things we can't see any longer, the things that have vanished and disappeared. Whatever you're doing, we can hear stuff on the other side, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's a transformer kind of thing. But that whole image of walls of the mind, how so much about our practice is to allow them to dissolve. And not be steel rigid, but just kind of allow them. This practice allows you to do that. So you can not only hear what's on the other side, but in time you might be able to use, you know, like a wisdom eye to see what it is you need to see.
Right.
So I had never read that before. That's not in any previous reading I had ever done at the Heart Sutra, and I really loved it. About 5 months ago, James Ford Roshi, back east, whom you know, did a I Love the Heart Sutra, I Adore the Heart Sutra essay that appeared in his blog back in December of 2014.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing. So, and I think that's the first time I had seen that, the walls of the I apologize for taking so much
time.
Thank
you.
That really knocked my socks off.
Yeah.
When I first read it.
Does remind me of Rinpoche's book, Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, where he talks about the monkey mind making its own cage.
Yes.
And
perfect.
Of course, meditation, if you quiet the mind, it's empty. Cage goes away.
Yes, there's no cage.
There's no cage.
Yes.
There never was a cage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to crumble down. It's not even there. It's a delusion.
It's a delusion.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the practice,
yeah.
Is to see the delusion that we're creating,
that's
self-creating.
Thing. Seeing that it's a delusion.
Yeah.
It's so easy to see that it's real.
It looks real. It feels real. Yes. Yes. But that chair, that could be anything. That could be a toy. You could turn it into, turn it over and make a shelter in an earthquake.
You
could burn it up and be warm. It could be transformed in any way and will be. No matter what, it will be transformed. And so will we. And so will all of this, even though this is old for America. Precious and old. Samia?
Let's say you had kids now, you know, you had a 7-8 year old. Would you talk to them like we're talking right now, that this is really, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I did talk to them that way. It's important to know that. No, my grandchildren, too, because I, by the time they got to know me, I was looking old. You know, they'd pinch my skin and say, ew! And they'd say, Oma, don't die! And I had to say, you know, I have to die to make room for your children. Everybody dies. You wouldn't want me to die after a while. So it's important for them to know. It's the truth.
It just sometimes seems too philosophical, you know, and complicated. I guess that's when I really don't see it.
I see. It's,
and, you
it,
know, I guess the only way is to do it. But, to me, Christianity is a little simpler, not simpler like shallow simpler, but kind of a less complicated approach.
Well, Christianity doesn't see things as falling apart. That's not in the teaching at all.
Well, it talks about suffering and the road is narrow and difficult. So,
yes, that's true.
So the suffering, what, through Jesus Christ?
Yes.
Which is through the truth, kind of the same thing. We're saved. Further in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's hard to compare the two.
Right.
Because the view is so different. The way of seeing is different. And so we have a hard time finding words that can see both views at the same time. But there's truth in both of them. And there's no reason to throw one away for the sake of the other. I think that's always a mistake. And find what's true for you. How you understand the way things are. I would say that not clinging to belief so much as being curious about how much you can know truly rather than having to believe something is more freeing, because if you have to believe something, you're clinging, and you can be really devastated when those things break in some way, and you have to see then it's just a belief and it's not true. So seeking truth for us in that way is, I think, very important. Not make up stories. We're all going to heaven, for instance. I think we don't know. So we can say we don't know, and maybe we are going to heaven, and that's a wonderful story, and that's a wonderful story to share. But to say it's a truth, or to say we're not going to die when we are, we always bump up against the truth sometime if we're living in a bubble of belief. It's a good question.
Well, it's because it's difficult for me because I'm barely grasping it. Like, this is not just the chairs. Like, how can I explain it to my kid?
They'll understand.
As a kid, you know, I went to Sunday school or Sabbath school, and they fed us the little stories, and they're so easy to understand, you know.
Yeah.
The simple things, you do it, this is good, 1 + 1 = 2. You don't go right into geometry. To me, this is like algebra and geometry. Or maybe I'm just not getting it, I don't know.
I think you're not getting it. A chair isn't a chair if it's burned up and it's a pile of ashes.
Yeah, but how does that apply when, you know, somebody's just, you know, stole your boyfriend and they don't care as a teenager, you know? That's not right. How do you forgive them?
Oh, good question. That's right. That's real suffering.
I'm not going to talk to her. I don't believe she did that.
Oh, poor Maya. Yeah. She just has to take it as it comes. It's hard. But that's the truth of it. That's what happens. And it hurts. And she's lucky to have a mom who cares. Give her my very best. I know how it feels. Well, I brought a bunch of books that are just suggestions that I thought for the last few minutes we should mention. That Red Pine has a platform sutra of Huineng that's very wonderful. That the Vimalakirti Sutra, this is one translation of it with commentary by Robert Thurman. We have done the Zen Kitchen of Enlightenment once, but we could do it again. It's about cooking. Cooking our life as well as cooking rice. And this wonderful book that I think you were studying, Opening the Hand of Thought?
Yes.
That also is a very wonderful book by Uchiyama Roshi.
Is. Yeah.
Which is an approach mostly to sitting practice. How to be this sitting practice in various different permutations. So you may have other suggestions, but I'd like you to take a look at those, and if you're interested, look them up and give it some thought so that you can... Oh, I'm so sorry. we can decide what to do next. And Wendy, you've got a list of what we've already done.
Well, yes, I don't know if it's relevant, but I think you should add that Uchiyama Roshi is a contemporary author, contemporary Buddhist monk.
Yes, and he was one of Koban's teachers.
Okay.
So there's that connection. He was Kodo Sawaki's student and inherited the Dharma from Kodo Sawaki and the temple. And Koban sat there all during his college years. And he begged Koban to come and stay and join them. But Koban had other fish to fry.
I believe that Shimaru is connected to those, to Uchiyama Roshi and to Kodo Sawaki. He wasn't, was it? Deshimaru a student of Kodo Sawaki?
He absolutely was. He was a student of Uchiyama and Kodo also, I think. And finally was sent to be the bishop of Europe and created a very large sangha in Europe that exists to this day and now is in America also in New Orleans. So, yes, Deshi Maru, that's a wonderful book too. Mushu Toku Mind, which is about the Heart Sutra, so I didn't bring it. So, if you like, come and take a look, and once we're done, and then we'll talk about it some more next week. Okay. Can you do a 1 minute sit? Oh, Wendy?
Yes, I have some announcements. So we're planning a full day sit up at Connie Batten's ranch on the 16th, Saturday the 16th of May. And we will need some help to set that up. We'll need some people to help with setup, maybe someone to offer to do a carpool to meet people here and join together in one car to drive up.
It's in the Santa Cruz Mountains. It's not too far from from Los Gatos, really. Mm-hmm. It's about... From here, would you think it would be about a half an hour, maybe?
About 40 minutes.
To be realistic.
About 40 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's straight up 17, and you get off on Summit Road. And pass the
I'll send directions out.
But I thought I'd give people an idea.
Past
the grocery store.
Yeah.
And then pass the road back down to Soquel and hang a right and go on up higher. So you end up pretty high with a beautiful view and meadows, and it's a gorgeous place, especially in May. It's just lovely. Very simple. Connie has done it all herself. She's lived there forever. And it's very special to be there. And she welcomes us so warmly. It just starts with a really good feeling.
And she serves us great food.
She always makes a big soup. She's an expert with soup.
Yeah. So it's a very peaceful environment for our day-long sits, and Angie offers Dokusan in the morning, and then after our lunch, there's a Dharma talk.
Can I ask a question? Oreo Key? Is it silent lunch? Is it, what do you do? What's your lunch?
Usually it's a silent lunch, and it's just in our laps.
Just
buffet, and we sit in a circle. Yeah.
She has an open air kitchen, a kind of covered structure, and she just sets the food out. It's rustic in a really good way. I mean, it's really simple. We just sit around in little kind of lawn chairs, and after lunch, Angie gets to talk.
Are we set for May, the month of May, for setting up? And are you?
For here?
Well, for here. Tonight, yeah.
So. I don't know. We are.
Well, we have Doan's. I think we have the Doan schedule worked out. We've
okay.
been just sort of, he's saying when Samia and I have been kind of taking the opening week by week, and whenever you're ready, Doug.
I have open house on the 19th, but every other Tuesday.
Okay.
Good.
Well,
so
great. Then we
I'll be glad to.
But if you
resume my opening duties, which I enjoy so much.
Okay, but you you can
open up.
Let me know if I'll remember that.
Yeah, just the 19th, and
I'll
okay. give you a heads up again.
Okay, great. And I really want to thank Samia and Hiseo for all of your help. Well, it's been really nice to be able to kind of share.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of pitches in. You've been great. Thank you. We did miss you.
And the flowers.
Yeah, the bodies of flowers.
My garden. Yeah, it's on fire right now. My garden is just everything. You know,
yes.
Everything just exploding.
Yeah. Great. Well, should we have our 1 minute sit?